Pat T from San Diego. Please welcome Pat.
Wow, there's too many people here. Why don't you guys go home? Too many people. No, I'm joking. I'm Pat. I'm a recovered alcoholic. We're going to wander through the steps. I'm going to wander through my experience. So it's sort of like getting an inside track on who I am. You may or may not want to join me, but we'll find out how it goes. Hey, if you're new tonight, you know, my heart always goes out to you because, God, it is just flat out scary. It is so scary to be new, and you see people around you that have some energy and some activity, and they look like their life is starting to turn around. And I know when I came in, that wasn't how I felt. What I felt like was I was going to, you know, seriously, when I came in, I got sober in 2002. God struck me sober, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But I'm going to share experience, strength, and hope, and the way I'm going to characterize it is this. Experience is going to be about my active alcoholism, my inability to control the drink and what happened as a result of that. And then I'm going to talk about strength. And the strength isn't about me. It's about doing what the first 100 people in AA did, which was they went through this work, page by page, line by line, statements into questions. And the craziest thing happened, they actually recovered. See, in old AA, the success rate of people not relapsing and staying sober for good for the rest of their lives, 75%. 75%. Today, it's not 75%. If you're around the rooms of AA, whether there's a good, solid message of recovery, and sometimes of, let me put it a different way. You're going to be around different rooms within AA. If it's a solid message of recovery that knows this work and works it out of the book, you're going to see those same percentages of 75%. If you're around rooms that talk about just keep coming back, put the plug in the jug, just think the drink through, call your sponsor. I'm not against sponsorship, by the way, at all. I love my sponsor. Then maybe you're going to be one of those people that's suffering where the percentages is 8% actually make it. 8%. And I'm here to tell you tonight that if I would have, I was incredibly blessed. I got sober in Colorado, where the work is done like your life depends on it, and where you find those rooms where you meet other alcoholics where their lives depend on doing this work. Listen to what they have to say, because if they're the real deal and they're no longer actively drinking and their lives has changed, there's a reason, and it's not them. It's not them. See, the thing that scared me the most was I'd see these guys all put together and their lives started changing and everything was going well. And all I could think in my little brain was, God, how did they finally pull it off? How did they figure it out? How did they do it? And I'd been beaten so badly by alcoholism that I didn't have it in me anymore to try. Honest to God, I didn't. The day before I went to my very first AA meeting, I went finally to see this therapist, and I'll be giving some of my stories as we go. I went to see this therapist who I've been working with on and off again for about a year and a half, trying to get over wife number two, and because she was the problem. And, you know, my job, they were the problem. And I'd come to the end of my rope. It was July the 4th. I got sober July the 9th, 2002. And July the 4th, I drank myself into another oblivion, and I slept with a gal that wasn't my wife across the street, came walking back and got woken up out of a drunken stupor by my then wife saying, did you sleep with this girl, who she had dragged over to the foot of the bed? All right? Awkward. A little awkward. No, honey, I did not sleep with that woman. Mm-mm. And so, I mean, one more lie, one more bullshit, and something went off on me this time, because this wasn't the first time I had incomprehensible demoralization. Stuff that you were talking about, Natasha, you know, you wake up with people that you're going, God Almighty, how'd I do this? But something went off inside of me, and it was as serious as a heart attack, and I said to myself, Pat, I'm either going to get sober, so help me God, or I'm going to commit suicide. And I wasn't bullshit. So I went to see this therapist, and I finally told her the truth for the first time in a year and a half. And I said, you know, I've never told you the other part of the story. The truth is, I don't know how to not drink every day of my life for the last 14 years. And I've been trying everything I know to stop. I've tried religion, I've tried God, I've tried workouts, I've tried therapy, I've tried everything, I've tried you. And nothing works. And I'm telling you right now, I'm going to commit suicide or I'm going to get sober. I'm not sure how. And I'd had this conversation about 7 in the morning with my, I'll call her my sort of like adopted mom. My real mom, that was sort of a mess. And so she was like my adopted mom. She had a lot of love and concern for me, and she was not in the program. But she said, honey, why don't you go see your therapist one more time? And so I did, and this gal was a black belt Al-Anon. She knew the work out of Al-Anon. And she said, Pat, I can't pronounce. And I told her the truth. I said, listen, here's the deal. I can't stop drinking. I have snakes crawling out of my skin. I'm slurring my speech. I can't get my act together. And she said, I've been waiting for you to finally get honest. And she said, why don't you go to this meeting called the Dragon's Den? Starts at 5:30. It's over here in Inglewood, Colorado. And before you go there, go get a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, where do you get those? She said, just go down to the Tattered Cover. It's a local bookstore, and just ask for it. So I go over to this place, you know. It was a couple moments of where I was sober, and I went up to the guy at the bookstore, and I said, do you guys have this thing called the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? And he goes, hey, George, where's the Alcoholics Anonymous book? Just shouting it out, right? And I'm going, oh, God, shut up. You know, and here's the deal, man. I was so full of lies to myself and delusion. I'm going, shut up. I don't want anybody to know I'm an alcoholic. Like the whole world didn't already know I'm an alcoholic. So I sat. Now I'd been relegated to the downstairs basement. Julie, my second wife, was going, you're not ever sleeping with me again. You could go downstairs so you can figure out where you're going to kick your ass and you're getting out of this house, which is what happened. And I've been sober, I think, for about maybe it was a week, and I could start to focus a little bit. You know, when you're newly sober, man, you can't hold a coffee cup, and your eyes, I don't know what it is, but it's like you see things backwards on the page, and, you know, you got the sweats going on, and the snakes were coming out of my skin, and all the other shit that goes on when you're brand newly sober, but I was finally able to start looking at this book, and I'm reading. And what Sally Lansing, this gal, wonderful, she would never mind me speaking of her name, but she said, read the first 164 pages. That's where the meat is. She didn't say it was a program of recovery. She said, that's just where it is. And so I'm reading this stuff, and this guy named Bill's story. And so I'm reading about what happened to Bill and how he drank and how he felt and how he thought and what he tried and what didn't work and what happened with the people around him. And I felt like somebody was telling my story. And I'm looking at it, I go, God, when was this thing written? Who wrote this thing? And there's no author. There's no author in the front table of contents. And then I go, when was this thing written? And I'm flipping through the first part of the book, and I go, 1939? How in the hell could this thing be so accurate? What the heck is going on? And that was my birth, if you will, into what has become a way of life. All right, now let's back up a little bit and talk about my drinking just for a second. So I started drinking when I'm 14 because I couldn't, I didn't know how to show up in life. You know, my family was a mess, and I sort of had the hillbilly existence. I thought my cousin was my cousin, but he really turned out to be my brother. And that was news to my dad. Yeah, that was news to my dad as well. And you know, and he turned out great. He went to prison for a bunch of years for a Ponzi scheme. And then, you know, my mom, God, she tried hard. She really did. But she was a major depression her entire life. She hardly ever got out of bed, never cooked a meal for us. And she was addicted to drugs and alcohol. So my normal upbringing was holy crap going on all the time in the house, right? And so Learn how to start telling the lie. You know, we all try to present, I don't know about you, but I try to present a stage character. I want people to think I had it all going on the outside. God, I didn't want anybody to know all the crap going on inside. So I learned early on, probably before I was even 5 years old, how to put on an act. So I get to 14, and the wheels had come off. I didn't know what the terminology would be, but I was at the place where I was ready to blow my brains out for the first time. And this guy shoved the beer in my hands at a party, you know, ninth grade party. And next thing I know, all the guys that went out to behind the corner to drink were gone. And I'm there with two more six packs, and I thought I'd found God. And I'm drinking, and I'm drinking, and I'm drinking. I'm going, universe, whoever you are, thank you. Do you know how it felt when it used to work? The drugs or the alcohol? Oh, my God. Seriously. It saved my life. Alcohol saved my life for a long time. Started drinking when I was 14. I did not get sober till I was 43. I was a pure alcoholic. And I think I would have been a great heroin and cocaine user. I really do. But I didn't have the privilege, so, you know, it is what it is. But I've had a few surgeries where they pop you up with the it's not heroin. What is it? I can't remember. Whoa, that morphine. That morphine is, that's good stuff. That's good stuff. But anyway, and so, and I always, and I like to get juice too, man. I like to get juice, right? But it worked, and it worked well for a long time. God, it made me feel okay in my skin. It made me feel like I could talk. It made me feel like, it quieted all the voices in my head. You guys have voices in your head? I mean, lots of them, like screaming at you. Before you even wake in the morning, they're already going. It saved my life. And it worked. And then it started turning on me a little bit by the time I'm 18. And so I'm thinking, you know, my coach in high school says, Pat, you're an alcoholic. You're going to die. You don't hear that every day. And he was right. I mean, I had some consequences, and I'll spare you the drunk log, but I was known in the school as the drunk. And so at 18, I give my life to Jesus, and I think that's going to get me clean from the drink. And I really, that was the reason I did it. I wanted to stop drinking. I knew the shit was flying, and I thought, this will work. And so I go into this great spiritual high for about 4 months, April of senior year in high school, and in August, I go up to college. How I qualified, I don't even know. I don't even remember taking the SATs or anything else. I don't remember anything about graduation. To this day, it's a total mystery. I don't even know what the hell. But I think I've had these dreams like I never graduated, but I think I did. You know what I mean? One of those deals. So I go to CSU in Fort Collins, Colorado, and I'm uncomfortable again. I hadn't drank in 4 months. Longest time I had not drank since I was 14. And I'm uncomfortable, and so I think, one beer won't hurt. I'm going to speed this up because I want to get to the recovery because that's what counts. So one beer won't hurt. Next thing I know, I end up in some lady's room who I don't know, and it starts the cycle. I don't know anything about the allergic reaction yet. I don't understand that in terms of who I really am. I don't understand the mental obsession. And no one's ever talked to me about the spiritual malady. None of this stuff. I have no AA in me. And so it starts a cycle. And it ends with me, my freshman year, flunking out of school because I can't show up to class. I went as a pre-vet. I was going to be a veterinarian. I love dogs. Anybody knows me? I love dogs. Karen and I, we rescue dogs, rescue German shepherds, love shepherds. I love shepherds more than I do people for the most part. I really do. Not always, but, you know, it starts out that way. And I flunk out of school. I flunk out of school. And I'm sitting there going, what the hell? And so I'm going to fast track to the very end of my drinking career. 1991, I'm sober for a little bit of time, again, trying it out on my own power. Anybody got those kind of experiences? God, maybe this time I've got it. You know, I got the career going on. I got money coming in. You know, I think maybe now I got it. I'm in Hilton Head, and we're at this sales conference thing, and my sales manager goes, hey, let's have a celebratory drink. And my thought in my mind was, God, it's been a little bit of time now. I think it's been like 8-9 months that I hadn't had a drink. Longest time I could remember. I remember, started at 14, now it's in 1991. That was in, I don't know. So do the math, it's like a long time. Long time. And so I have a Tangerine tonic, and I think, God, this will be great, because, again, I'm not comfortable in my own skin. I have the drink, and as God is my witness, I couldn't shut down from drinking on a daily basis from 1991 to 2002, and I just barely got in here, barely made it in here alive. 1991 to 2002, and I cannot shut it down. What the hell is wrong with me? So I walk into the rooms of Dragon's Den, and this gal named Thalia, sort of similar to Tyla, you know, and one of my favorite youngsters in the whole world. I love her. And so Thalia says to me, Pat, you never have to feel the way you're feeling tonight ever again. If you'll do what we've done, you will become recovered. And your life will be free, and you'll never have to think about alcohol again. The obsession will be removed, and your life will be recreated beyond your wildest expectation. And I was in such a desperate spot that when I heard her say that, and this gal had nothing in common with me. She was probably 25 years older than I was. She came from wealth and richness, and I didn't. There was no similarities in terms of socioeconomics, nothing similar in background. But she said, and she spoke to my heart, said, your life could be recreated. And I go, God, I want that. So let's talk about the strength. Let's talk about the strength. She walks me, my sponsor walks me through the first part of the big book, step one. Step one is the better part of 54, 55 pages of the instructions, which are in 103 pages of the big book. If you add in the doctor's opinion, 8 more pages. 111 pages of instructions. Over 50 pages is on step one. The blessing that we have is that the first 100 understood that unless you get square on step one, nothing else matters. If you don't understand, and if you've not made your own discovery, whether or not you're an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, step 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12 in the way of life that we live will never happen for you. And what will happen is you'll go in and out of the rooms. And you'll be on that circuit. 1, 2, 3 out. 1, 2, 3 out. 1, 2 out. 1 out. Whatever it is, out. Anybody have that experience? The reason I believe isn't because you're of weak character. It's not because you're of weak will. It's not because you don't have a desire to get sober. None of that. There's a lot of people in the original 100 that had all sorts of crap happening to them before they finally got it, but they did get it. And here's what they discovered. See, the big book asks us to turn statements into questions. It really does, because it says for us to consider things all the way through the book. And if I consider, what's my physical experience with alcohol? When I put it into my body, can I control how much I drink? My experience was I couldn't control it. I mean, I couldn't control it at all. Oh, once in a while, I might be able to pull it off. God, if there's a real reason, but not even so much towards the end. I couldn't control the amount. And so my sponsor said, that's the first part of our disease called the physical allergy. See, Pat, your inability to control the drink is not like anybody else that is not an alcoholic. Anybody else could shut it down if there's a good enough reason. You can't. Mental obsession is the next part. Pat, when you were stone cold sober, did you pick up that damn drink again? Just like Natasha was talking about earlier, when you knew it was going to screw you to the wall towards the end. And you had every reason, rationally speaking, to not pick up the drink. Did you pick it up again? My experience is every single time. Anybody else to relate to that? What the hell is wrong with us? Right? Now, here's the scary news. In the rooms of AA, there are people that are sponsoring others that are not alcoholics. And they tell you crazy, asinine things that do not relate to our experience. Just think to drink through. Call me up if you're struggling. You know, you just got to know your triggers. Really. My trigger is I wake up the next morning and there's a problem. That's my trigger. It's called I'm breathing. That's my trigger. Right? And so I'm sitting there going, and my sponsor said to me, he says, if you can't control when you're stone cold sober picking up the drink, Pat, what's your next solution? What are you going to do? And I already had those answers. I tried mountain biking at a hysterically high-end pace. I tried cliff jumping. Adrenaline junkie, right? I'm trying everything I know to try to get some peace in my heart. And then he took me to the third part of the first step, and he said, spiritual malady. It's a fancy word, and I didn't like it so much because I didn't want any part of God. Because I'd given myself to Jesus how many years ago? I'm 14, 15, 18 years old. It didn't work. Later on, there's another story about that. But at the time, it did not work because I didn't know what was going on. And that was the same thing that happened to Dr. Bob, by the way. Dr. Bob knew all about the good stuff. He knew all about Oxford Group. He knew all about this holy connection with God. And yet, it did not keep him sober. How come? Because he didn't understand what his disease was. He's a doctor, and he didn't understand his disease. Bill Wilson, a stockbroker, tells him, Doc, if you're like me, you can't control the stop, you can't control the start, you can't control anything in between, and you're screwed. Is it getting worse? Yeah, it's getting worse. Anybody have that experience? Gets worse? Here's the deal. The good news is this is an absolute disease, and there is a cure for a mind and body. The mental obsession can literally be overcome. And the physical allergic reaction can be overcome, and you never have to experience either one of those things ever again. The book in the fourth step says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So what's a spiritual malady? Well, here it is in a nutshell. Natasha talked on it. Bedevilments, page 52, it says something like this. Are you having trouble in your internal head saying, can you control your emotions? Or do you wake up jacked and you have no idea what's going to happen? Raise your hand if you can relate to that. If you cannot control your emotions, welcome to the human race. We were not designed to try to do it alone. But as an alcoholic, we're screwed because if we get uncomfortable enough to a deep enough level, what's our solution? To drink, no matter what the consequences, we got to drink. Why? Because we need ease and comfort just for a moment. And the big book offers ease and comfort for a lifetime. The big book, world says, I just got to be free of my problems, my troubles. Right? That's the goal. Every self-help group in the world saying, here's how you never have any troubles again. The big book doesn't say anything about that. What the big book says is you can be free going through your troubles. Do you hear the difference? How would you like to be in a space, Pat? This is my sponsor speaking. Where you've already told me, Pat, about how you screwed up your children's lives, your wife's lives, your business associates' lives. Everything in you that you've been touching, you've turned into foobar. So I would say that your personal relationships are screwed up. Would you agree? Yes, they are. So what have you done to fix them? Everything I could think of. Self-help, counseling, do this, do that. Well, is it working? Well, once in a while for a little bit, but then I turn into me again and it's all screwed up. I can't get rid of me. Me is a shit. Me's no fun. Me is a pain in the ass and has been screwing up my life for a long time. Anybody got to the place where you had a lot of self-hatred? God. So my sponsor says, so you can't control your emotions, you can't control your personal relationships, you're prey to misery and depression, you've already told me about all that crap you've been doing. You can't seem to be of real help to other people. And I said, stop right there, I don't care about other people, I don't care about real help to anybody else, so easy on that, whatever. So I didn't care about being useful to anybody. I didn't care about being helpful to anybody. And I certainly didn't care about your dreams, wishes, and desires. And then I'm going to fast track over to another part. So my sponsor said, Pat, this program is about opposites. Everything that you think you know, you don't. And until you admit you don't know how to live life, you'll never learn how to live life. Alcohol beats us into a position of, what is it called? Reasonableness. I'm willing to listen to someone else. Not because I think someone else is so cool, it's because I have no other solutions. I was a worshiper of people, places, things, nature, alcohol, sentiment. I tried to worship pride, anger. I thought maybe if I could live by anger, I was homicidal. People didn't want me around me towards the end, man. I'd freaking go off. And I wasn't the toughest guy in the street, but I had this delusion that I was Mr. Badass. I'm glad no one ever took me up on it too much. It was crazy. You know, I was one big act. I was one big act with no solution, and I was as shallow can be. And I had no answers, and the problems were so big, and it was so complex, and I'm going, God, there's no way out of this. There's no way out. I don't care if there's a God of the universe. It's not going to help me. And the funny thing was, my sponsor took me to the end of the big book, Vision for You, and he told me the story about Dr. Bob, Bill Dotson, and this young devil-may-care kid. AA number 2, AA number 3, and AA number 4. Dr. Bob had it all going on. He's a proctologist. Can you imagine this? He's a drunk operating on assholes. True? Let's get right to it. So I'm sure there's some, probably some people are walking around going, I've got a scar from Dr. Bob. I got a scar. You can notice it. And then Bill Dotson's an attorney. Devil May Care kid is this rich kid. And none of them can stay sober. And they all had the same experience from all different parts of life. And they all had to submit to this program. See, the program isn't for people who necessarily need it. It's for people who have no other choices. And there was this moment in my life, thank God, that I didn't want to die more than I did want to die. Does that make sense? And it's a miracle from God when that happens. Because it's a thin reed of hope. Now let's go into this third part, hope. The hope is, if you're here tonight and you're hearing all this recovery and you're hearing about all these miracles that have happened and you're hearing how our lives get recreated and you're going, there's no hope for me, the answer is not true. I've been sponsoring kids and men and a few women for 15 years. And if I could do it full time, I'd do it full time. It's the highlight of my life. I mean it from the bottom of my heart. I'd rather be working with other people that do not know this solution 24/7. Because watching God of the universe change a person's life, thank you, change a person's life from no hope to maybe there's a small thimble full of possible to, oh my God, maybe this thing will work for me to, it worked. And watching their life be recreated beyond anything I could ever imagine. And if you're a sponsor and you're watching people's lives and you're giving them the real deal, the pure shit, this program, their lives change. They're not the same human being. Because, see, something happened with Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson and Bill Dotson, this young devil-may-care kid. And then I can name a few others. A guy that got it going on in Cleveland, a guy named Clarence Snyder. None of these guys gave a crap about another human being. And towards the end of their lives, after they recovered, you know what their statements were? The highlight of their life was taking this message to somebody else. Now, what the heck? I didn't want to take this message to anybody. When I came in here, I cared nothing about anybody. By the time I had had my first spiritual awakening as a result of completion of these 12 steps, I couldn't think of anything of a higher calling in life than to take this to someone else. Why? Because I knew fundamentally in my life that it's never going to be the same. and that I never thought possible that I would have a conscious contact with God, first of all, and that second, that I would want it, and third, that I'd pursue it with every fiber of my body for the rest of my life, and that I'd want to give away this opportunity to meet God who can solve all of my problems, not just my drinking. See, AA is not about not drinking. It's not. And where it gets off the rails sometimes is you'll hear rooms talk about, hey, at least you're sober today. I screwed up my wife. I cheated on, you know, my business. And I murdered somebody, but at least I didn't drink. Now, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you know what I'm talking about, right? Their life is for shit. They're dry as toast, and you want to get away from it as soon as you see them because there's nothing in their life that's good. They put down the drink, and you're going, God, pick up a drink. Please. We weren't designed to live that way. Honestly, if there's not a sufficient substitute of ease and comfort at a big level, not a small level, a level that hits you between the eyes in the deepest part of your cynical nature, in the deepest part of your boredom, in the deepest part of your unbelief in yourself, others, and the possibility of God. If this sufficient substitute doesn't do this for you, then you've missed out on what these 12 steps, as directly and precisely followed in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, will do for each one of us. I think it's inspired, I do. I think the Alcoholics Anonymous book is inspired. And I have people, every time, if you're interested, we have a workshop that we do in every January. We do it for about 6 months. And Leanne and I run it sort of an extension. It's not really true, but what we do is we walk people through these 12 steps as we had received. And we do it for about 6 months. And it happens down in Old Town. So if you're curious about it, talk to me after. But every time we do these things, I have somebody come up to me and say, is it possible that I'm that one person where this won't work? Do you ever feel like you're that person? That's a scary spot to be in. I was working with a guy today. Real time. There's not a day that goes by that I'm not working with somebody, and I don't say it braggadociously. I say it as a privilege that God gives me. And this guy today was shut down emotionally like few guys I could ever meet. And he was almost psychotic for a long time in his life. And he'd been sober for like 6-7 years. And nothing was happening inside of his heart. Nothing was happening inside of his head. And he says, Pat, if I don't find what you have or what I'm hearing with some of you guys around, that I hear this message, I'm going to die. Will you help me? Are you kidding me? Of course I'll help you. I don't have anything. I have no power to change your life, but I could point you to the person that does. So let's go through the book one page at a time. And this person, so we're in the fourth step, and he connected the dots. God allowed him to connect the dots on his fourth column where he started to see his selfish and self-centeredness. Thank you. Selfish and self-centeredness and how it was destroying not only his life, but everybody's around him. And I'll talk from my own experience. See, I was isolated from all people. Because, playing the stage character, I had no endurance to be around you for too long of a time because my rap-a-dap to keep my act together was about 35, 45 seconds. Then I had to get off the stage. I had to get away from you because you're going to find out that I'm full of shit and that my life's an absolute disaster and all my gamesmanship's not going to work once again and I'm left with myself. That was the position I came in. Forget about the drink. See, Don Pritz, a guy who started doing the work, exposed a bunch of us to the way we do this work, he said the problem with AA sometimes, and Don Pritz is a trustee. He's a trustee at large in general service, and he went around the entire country. And towards the end of his life, he said to people at this conference that goes on in the summertime, Fellowship of the Spirit, he said, the problem with AA today is that people are more concerned with being sober than they are with being recovered. And they're missing the joy and the power and the depth and the richness of what it's about. Bill Wilson, God dang. I mean, I get so excited. Sorry. I'm not sorry, but I don't want to sound like the evangelist. Woo-hoo! You know, there's no lectures to endure. So Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, and Bill Dotson, and this Devil May Care kid, they worked their ever-loving tails off for a year and a half, from 1935 to the fall of 1936. And guess how many people were sober after that intensive work? 7 more people. How many people are in here tonight? What would have happened if they would have given up? Where we have been? There is no big book in 1936. Didn't even come out until 1939. There would have been no big book at all if there wasn't a miracle. If there wasn't a wholesale change where the medical community, the religious community, looked at what had happened with these bunch of crazy alcoholics, and we're crazy. And thank God he leaves that craziness in us. I love that part of us. I mean, seriously, at some point we're fun to be around, right? Right? I mean, we have some good stuff going on. We'll try things no one else will even think of. And we come up with great business solutions, man. We figure it out. Nothing's impossible. So a year and a half later, these guys, only 7 more people are sober, but God, they're sober and they're free and their lives have been recreated. They're not just reorganized at all. How much time? Like 1 minute? 2. This is perfect. I'm going to leave you with a thought. If it was up to me to get over my resentments, if it was up to me to get over my fears, if it was up to me to work on my defects, I'd be dead in the gutter. I had no more power to do that. Hell, I worked on my defects forever. It was like whack-a-mole. Bum-bum! You remember that whack-a-mole game? You know, hit one and it pops up over here, and you hit that one and it pops over here. It was crazy. It was crazy. But what if, from an internal going outside, you become recreated, not even in areas that you thought were possible, that you weren't even dreaming that you wanted, and God recreates you from the inside out? And I had this conversation with one of my sponsees today, and he says, oh my God, if the fear is overcome, thank you, if the fear is overcome, then my need for doing all this crazy behavior and having these silly ideas and these attitudes, that would just go away, wouldn't it? And I go, amen. Amen. But I can't give you that gift. Only God can if you're willing. And the only condition God asks is that we be open and honest and thorough, and we expose ourselves. And the scary thing about exposing ourselves going through this work, if we really, really go through this work, is what in the hell if it doesn't work? If it doesn't work, I am literally dead. So that's the leap of faith that each one of the people that did this work took on. And they faced their monsters in the closets. And here's the story, and I'm going to shut up. If anybody have a mom and dad that told them to clean up the room? That's somebody, yeah. And they say, hey, you know, your socks are on the floor, you know, your shirts that we just washed, you know, you need to put those things away, and your toys are all over the room. God dang it, clean up your room. How many of you guys are excited about that proposition? You are not. You're lying. Yeah. But what if mom or dad who loves you said the following? Hey, honey, there's some stuff on your floor, and there's some crazy, you know, old toys and everything else. It's just a mess. Hey, everything that you don't want, throw it out in the hallway. Throw it out in the hallway. Don't put it away. Don't reorganize it. Don't rearrange it. Throw it out in the hallway. And I'll give you brand new gifts. Anybody up for that? Statement of close, I'm done. If you will precisely follow the instructions in the first 164 pages of this book and be honest and thorough enough with yourself, going through with somebody who knows this work and turn statements into questions, find out your truth, not somebody else's truth. Your truth. God of your understanding, your higher power of your understanding will recreate your life beyond your wildest dreams. Thank you very much.